Before we jump into the text, though, let me ask you a question. How many of you would say that this week at some point you had what you would consider a bad day? You had a bad day this week. It's okay. I had to go over to Atlanta this week for a job situation and I had to spend a couple days there and then drive home. And anytime you go to Atlanta, you just know, like, I'm going to be sitting in traffic at some point, at somewhere in the city, wherever I go, I'll be sitting in traffic. So I thought we got through with our meeting. I thought, well, I'll just get out of here a little earlier and beat the traffic. But I was like on the very north end of the city, like up in Duluth area, and so way up 85. And I thought, well, I don't want to go all the way back through downtown Atlanta because I'm running a risk if I do that and hit 20 and come over. So I'm just going to take the back road over that comes through. I don't even know what that mountainous area of Alabama is called. Men something, tone something, all that. You know what that road is? And I always forget, it's like two lanes for like 3,000 miles. And some dude gets a kick out of driving 12 miles per hour. And so then I got caught in traffic where I didn't think I was going to get caught in traffic. So bottom line is it took me like 5.5 hours to get back from Atlanta. And I pulled into my garage and did not have the Spirit of Jesus as I had been. So that was like my bad day. This week, I think a lot of us have bad days throughout the week. Daniel Powder and his song is not the only bad day going on. This is my favorite bad day story. You think you had a bad day. So this is my favorite bad day story. A man was working on his motorcycle on the patio, and his wife was nearby in the kitchen. And while he was racing the engine, the motorcycle accidentally slips into gear, and the man, still holding on to the handlebars, is dragged along as it slammed through their glass patio doors. Well, his wife, who's hearing this loud crash, runs in the room to find her husband cut and bleeding, this wrecked motorcycle now inside their house, slammed through the shattered patio door. So she calls for an ambulance, and because the house is kind of on this fairly high hill, she goes down several flights of stairs to meet the paramedics and to escort them up to her husband. So while these attendants are loading up her husband, the wife manages to get the motorcycle back upright, to push it back outside, and she just out of instinct takes these paper towels and blots up the spilled gasoline that was in the floor from the motorcycle and throws them into the toilet and then goes to check on her husband. Well, he gets treated for his cuts and bruises, comes home, looks at the shattered patio door, the damage done to his motorcycle. He's all distraught, so he goes into the bathroom to console himself while he's taking care of business and lights a cigarette. And just as he's about to stand up, he flips the cigarette butt between his legs into the toilet. The wife, who is in the kitchen, hears a loud explosion and her husband screaming, and goes to the bathroom and finds him lying in the floor with his pants blown away and his lower parts burned. So she once again phones for an ambulance, and the same paramedic crew shows back up. And as the paramedics are escorting this man down the stairs to the ambulance, they ask the wife, what happened? How did he burn himself? And she tells them, and they start laughing so hard that one of them slips and falls, drops the stretcher, dumps the guy out down the steps, and he breaks his arm. That is a bad day. Keep that in mind this week when you have a bad day. And don't throw gasoline-soaked paper towels in your toilet. The story of John 9 is a guy of a story that's not just having a bad day, but he's been dealt a bad hand in life. This story comes after John chapter 8, obviously, that we've been in the last 3 weeks. And in John chapter 8, Jesus has gone on to this discourse about how he is the true light, the light of the world. If you haven't been with us in the Belief Project, the purpose that John wrote this gospel, he lays out for us at the end of the book, where he says that I've given you these things so that you might believe in Jesus as the Son of God, as the Christ. And John says in his purpose statement that he is giving us what he calls signs. Signs point to things. And the signs that he points to are miracles that Jesus performed. And so what he would often do is give us a miracle, and then he would give us teaching, and then he would give us a miracle, and then he would give us teaching. And so the teaching that John just provided for us from Jesus was Jesus saying, I am the light of the world. And then he kind of gives us this case study in chapter 9 to validate what Jesus has just claimed. And in the process, he teaches us some very important lessons on compassion and on suffering. Now, we covered the subject of suffering extensively in a series that we recently did called Why Me? That was based on the story of Job. So I don't want to get back into a lot of details about what we went through that series. If you are not a part of that series, I would encourage you, you can always go back on our website and go to our sermons and watch the videos or listen to the podcast and to listen to the Why Me series. I would say that of all the series that we've done at City Church since we started a few years ago, that the Why Me series is right up there with one of the ones that we've gotten most positive response from because it's such a relevant subject. And so I'm not going to dive back into a lot of what we talked about in the Job series, the Why Me series, but we are going to see some things about suffering from our text today that are very important to keep in mind. So let's jump into our story, John chapter 9, verse 1. As Jesus passed by, he saw a man blind from birth. Blind from birth. So this guy's been dealt a bad hand. He's blind from birth. From birth. Now think about it. So let's illustrate this. Do something for me. Everybody close your eyes where you can't see. Now I'm not talking about like end of the service, close your eyes where like only half of you do. Like all of you close your eyes for this illustration. No peeking, no looking around. Zach, close your eyes. Close your eyes. Okay, so everybody's eyes closed. You can't see anything. Now do something for me with your eyes closed. Think about a person in your life that you love. So a spouse, a boyfriend, girlfriend, a child. Think about them. Like picture them in your mind with your closed eyes. Okay, got it? Keep that picture. All right, now think about, with your eyes closed, a sunset or a sunrise, whichever person you are. Sunset or sunrise. Think about that. Okay, think about the ocean, an ocean view, beach, ocean view. Okay, so we all have that image. Now, eyes closed, think about if you had never seen or witnessed any of the things that you just thought about. You can open your eyes. Blind from birth. He never saw the faces of the ones he loved. He never witnessed a sunset, a sunrise, an ocean. He was blind from birth. Now, I'll tell you, in that day and a little bit even in our day and age, that's a resume killer. Like, there's not a lot of jobs out there for blind from birth. In his day and age, the only job, if we want to call it that, that he would be able to have was a beggar. That's what he was, a beggar. He can't work in that culture. He can't marry. He would be ostracized. He can't travel. Many would say that he had been dealt a bad hand in life. Look at verse 2. As his disciples, the disciple of Jesus, asked Jesus, Rabbi, who sinned? This man or his parents, that he was born blind. So the disciples display a common belief in that day and our day. By the way, it's funny to me that they ask this in the presence of the guy. Like, the guy's blind, he's not deaf. And so here's the disciples saying to Jesus, like, who sinned, this guy or his parents? But they have a very faulty assumption that we'll just call karma suffering. Like, you suffer because of doing something bad. So their logic is, this guy's blind, so someone must have done something wrong. And in their framework, only him or his parents are the only two options. Only two options, him or his parents. So that's one of those questions like, no, there's more options. You got to give me more options. But in this case, in their minds, there's only two options. Did he sin or did his parents sin? Now, you understand, like, the two-option choice. Like, you ask questions when you live in the state of Alabama that only have two options, when really there's more options out there. Like, when you move into the state, you're asked one of two options, a question about one of two options. You know what they are, right? Are you going to be an Alabama fan, or are you going to be an Auburn fan. Like, I'm not from Alabama, but I realized, like, when I moved here, like, that's, in your minds, that's the only two options. Like, you realize, like, there's other teams out there. I know you don't think there are, but there's other universities, there's other colleges, there's other teams that occasionally win football championships. There's teams that, other teams that win a lot of other types of sports championships, like basketball and baseball. I know those don't count in this state, but in your mind, you're like, there's only two options, right? There's no other options out there. And so, like, this is the disciples. Did this guy sin or did his parents sin? And Jesus is going on to go on to explain, like, hey, there's more options. But this is kind of a cause and effect mentality, a karma mentality. Like, if you are given good things in life, it must be because you're a good person or you behave in a moral good way. If you have bad stuff happen to you in life, it must be because you're a bad person or you make bad decisions. Recently, some of you know that I've had a couple of car incidents. So I had a guy that slammed into the back of me when I was in downtown Birmingham. And I got my car back, got it into the repair shop. And then it's just like, all right, how much is the insurance company going to repair and how much are they not? So there's that conversation that goes on during the repairing of the car. And I don't usually give a shout-out to insurance companies, so I won't do it here. But the insurance company that was taking care of my car, State Farm, did a really good job taking care of me. I can't speak for everybody's experience with them, but for us, they did a good job taking care of the damage to my car, and we kept finding these other little things that would come up as he was repairing it. And so the last thing that the guy fixed on my car, I went, and he was shocked that State Farm agreed to cover it. And he said to me, Devin, you must be a really good person or something really good going on in your life because they've agreed to take care of this claim. And obviously, I just kind of laughed it off, but I thought in the moment, like, that's our mentality, isn't it? Like, good person, good behavior, good stuff happens. Bad person, bad behavior, bad stuff happens. But look what Jesus says in verse 3. Jesus answered, it was not that this man sinned or his parents. Not him or his parents that sinned. Like, that's not the result. Jesus says, karma thinking is flawed. There's something bigger at work. So I want to make a couple of observations about suffering right here. And again, if you want to dive into this deeply, go back and listen to the Why Me series for more. But let me make a couple of observations about suffering. One, sin can and often does lead to suffering. Sin can and does often lead to suffering. All suffering is at some level the result of the brokenness of the world in which we live. And that can be traced back to Genesis 3, the fall, original sin. So all suffering at some level is kind of the ultimate result of sin. And I would go further to say that there are specific sins that can lead directly to suffering. Your sins or someone else's can lead to suffering in your life. You can be a victim of someone else's sin that causes suffering in your life. And there's some, I mean, again, we don't have to rattle through the list here, but there's some obvious sins in life that result in suffering. Like substance abuse results in suffering. Physical abuse results in suffering. Mental abuse, verbal abuse results in suffering. The sinful abuse of power results in other people suffering. The sinful abuse of greed results in other people suffering. Their sexual sins result in suffering. Sin causes suffering. It will cause suffering in a marriage, in the life of your children, your own health, in your finances, in the lives of other people, inflicted upon yourself. And so sin can and often does lead to suffering. Don't miss that. Like, that's the end game. It'll take you there. So let me quickly say this next point, though. Sin or suffering is not always the direct result of personal sin. Okay? So sin can and often does lead to suffering. But just because someone is suffering is not always the direct result of personal sin. Godly people suffer. We saw it in the story of Job. Job was like, righteous dude, big family, honoring to God. The enemy comes and is like, God, well, no wonder he serves you. Look at all you've given him. And like, Job was a godly man who suffered. The prime example of this is Jesus. I mean, Jesus was sinless, and yet he suffered tremendously. Godly people often suffer because we live in a broken world, and suffering happens. Suffering does not always come with an explanation. There's a divine mystery to it. And it's very easy for us to fall into the same mindset of the disciples. This person's suffering. There's some kind of karma involved. They're getting what they deserve. God must be punishing them. God must be rewarding me because my bank account's full right now. God must be punishing me because I had this unexpected bill come up. Like, it's easy for us to fall into the mindset of karma, to fall into the mindset that the disciples had. So I'm not like a big musical fan, but I have seen, do not throw things at me when I say this, if you're a man in the room. I have seen, because I have girls and daughters, I have seen The Sound of Music. Boo. I've seen it. It's okay. My manhood's fully intact. I've seen The Sound of Music. And in The Sound of Music, Julie Andrews plays the character Maria. And she says in one of her songs, "So somewhere in my youth or miserable past, I must have done something good." Because she's getting ready to be married. This is another very poor illustration. Remember Bob Carlisle's song a few years ago? Butterfly kisses, bedtime prayers. How many of you remember this song? Butterfly kisses. In his song, which was played like at least 1.2 million times at weddings during a one-year window, Bob Carlisle's song, Butterfly Kisses, he says, one of his lyrics, "With all I've done wrong, I must have done something right to deserve your love every morning. And butterfly kisses at night." Almost turned it into a rap. How cool would that have been? "With all I've done wrong, I must have done something right to deserve your love and those butterfly kisses at night. If I'm good, good stuff must happen. If I'm bad, bad stuff must happen." Now, there is a little bit of truth in that mentality, but it's not the whole story. Because Jesus says, neither this man nor his parents sin. So let's pick up the next. We're kind of walking through these truths. Sin can and often does lead to suffering. Suffering's not always the direct result of personal sin. The next truth that has to do with suffering in this text, God is working during and through suffering. God is at work during suffering. God works through suffering. Look at the last part of verse 3 and then through verse 5. So Jesus says, neither this man nor his parents, but that the works of God might be displayed in him. We must work the works of him who sent me while this day, night is coming when no one can work. As long as I am in the world, I am the light of the world. Picks back up on the teaching of chapter 8. So what Jesus is saying here is that the work of God was going to be displayed in this man. That God was going to be glorified. That there is a divine plan and purpose behind suffering. Even if we never see it, even if we never understand it, even if we never recognize it. And we know this, like we all know people, the stories of people who have displayed Jesus during intense suffering in their lives. We have watched the followers of Jesus at times display Jesus during the toughest seasons of life, right? Like, you can think of people that you have watched go through stuff in life that there's only one explanation. Like, the Jesus factor is the only way they were able to go through what they went through in this moment and still be grace on display. So we've watched this, and here's what I want you to hear if you're suffering today. Whether it's from your own sin, someone else's sin, or just some divine mystery while you're going through what you're going through, if you are suffering, what I want you to know is that God is near. He's close. What Jesus said in John 9 at the very opening is, as he passed by, he saw a blind man. Can I tell you today, regardless of what you're going through, God sees you. He sees you. He understands. He is near. Lean into him. So did you hear what Jesus said to this blind guy whose life is just revolves around nothing but darkness? Jesus reminds him, the work of God is going to be done in you. God's going to be glorified. And then he says, I am the light of the world. I'm the light of the world. So whatever darkness you're in right now, whatever darkness is invading your soul, whatever darkness sometimes in those moments in life, like we don't feel like we can see, we can't see clearly, there's a lot of spiritual darkness or darkness in my life right now. I want you to hear that Jesus is the light of the world, that Jesus brings light into darkened souls, that God is near, that God is close, that Jesus sees you, that Jesus understands, that he identifies, and as we'll see in a moment, he has compassion on you. If you are suffering, know that God is working through your suffering to do his work in you. Which leads us to our next truth about suffering in this text, and that's this: Jesus is compassionate. Jesus is compassionate. So sometimes you read things in the text, you're like, why did that happen? And why did Jesus choose this way? Like, this is one of those moments, verse 6. Having said these things, he spat on the ground and made mud with saliva. Then he anointed the man's eyes with the mud and said to him, go wash in the pool of Siloam, which means sent. So he went and washed and came back seeing. So if you're a guy in here today and like you've been kind of zoned out from the message so far, and then when I read in the text, like, Jesus spat on the ground. Like, your ears perk up, don't they? Like, Jesus spit. Like, he was a spitter. Like, I can identify with that. Like, what's up with men and spitting? Like, it's just like a natural instinct. Like, I didn't spit for like 4 years of my life, and then I moved to the south, and I walked outside, and I'm like standing in the yard, and I'm like, why did I do that? Like, why did I spit? Like, in this moment, why did I start spitting? And like Levi, when he started getting old enough, like for some reason I had was in the yard and just spit. And Levi was like, so he's like, now I'm going to learn how to spit. And so now I have a toddler running around like pointing at me in the yard like, Daddy, it's your turn to spit. So I can spit. And now it's translated into teeth brushing time at night. And so every night when I brush Levi's teeth and he gets done, he's like points in the sink like, Daddy, now it's your turn to spit, like you're supposed to spit. And so I spit, and then he spits, but you can't spit, it's just like little liquid going out toward his nose holes. But like, Jesus spat. You're like, what? Now let me qualify here. Was it because he had dip in his mouth? Hello. But Jesus spat, and he makes a mud pie and puts it on this guy's eyes. Now, there's all kinds of theories, like, why did Jesus spit? Some people believe because there was some belief in that day that there was medicinal qualities in saliva. Other people say it was a reference back to Genesis 2, where Jesus, God from the dust of the ground, made human. So it's like this recreation act where from the dust, Jesus is recreating this guy's eyes. We don't know the real logic behind why he spat. But kind of what's more fascinating is the rest of it, that he covers his eyes with mud, and then he's like, go to the pool of Siloam, which you notice how John gives us a little parenthesis here, which means sent. Let me kind of give you that. So 20 times in the Gospel of John, Jesus is called the one sent from God, the sent one. And John is saying here, like, he's sending him to the pool of Siloam, which means sent. But don't think for a second that the pool's got anything to do with this guy's healing. It's not about the pool of Siloam. Ultimately, Jesus is the ultimate healer because he is the sent one from God, that he is the compassionate one, that he is the healer, that it's not about the pool, it is about Jesus. And so this guy goes, he obeys, and he comes back seeing. He washes his eyes in the pool, and he comes back seeing. I mean, like, this is compassion on display. It's an exhibition of compassion from Jesus. And let me be quick to say here, like, do not miss this in the text. The compassion of Jesus is often most displayed to the most ostracized people in culture. That's where his compassion is most often on display. You know, the one miracle that again and again and again is found in the Gospels is constantly Jesus making blind people see again and again and again. Why? Because blindness in that culture meant what I said at the beginning: no work, no job, no family. You're confined to be a beggar. We will ignore you. Remember the story in the other Gospels where this blind guy named Bartimaeus hears Jesus is coming. He's like, I want to get in touch with Jesus. And he starts screaming out, like, Jesus, have mercy on me. And what do? They're like, Bartimaeus, go back to your corner. Shut your mouth. Jesus don't want to have anything to do with you. And he cries out louder and louder. That represents who Jesus is. That he goes to the most ostracized in life. He makes the blind to see. Blindness was severely debilitating in that culture. You were 100% dependent on other people. Listen to me closely. Whatever you're facing in life today, whatever has blinded you, Jesus is filled with compassion. He cares about you. He loves you. He understands. He is a suffering Savior. Lean into Him. Find comfort in Him. And then I want to just bring up one more thing about suffering here. And that is this: faith precedes sight. Faith precedes sight. In the Scriptures, belief most often comes before seeing. Like, we miss this in the story sometimes. Jesus instructs this blind man, go to the pool and wash. He's blind. Go to the pool and wash. He's a blind dude. Like, I don't know how he got to the pool. I don't know if he knew the area well enough to kind of navigate to the pool. I don't know if he had people help him get to the pool. But there's some instructions of Jesus here, like, go to the pool. Like, take that step of obedience and faith. Get to the pool, because there's healing at the pool. And most oftentimes in Scriptures, faith precedes sight. Not always. Sometimes Jesus is, like, healing people with no faith and reaching out to them when there's no initiation from them. But in this case, and most often in Scripture, belief comes before seeing. This guy's blind. And in the Gospel of John, we are invited to believe in Jesus. And here's what I love. That means that you are believing in Jesus sometimes when you're blind. You can't see all the answers. You can't understand it fully. You can't wrap your mind around it all. All of your questions haven't been answered. And John says to us, believe. Look at the signs and believe, because belief often comes before seeing. I am a pastor standing on this stage today telling you, I don't have it all figured out. There's questions I don't have answers to. I don't know why children suffer and go through stuff. I don't know why we have a friend whose kid's dying from cancer. I don't know answers to these things, because sight doesn't always come before believing. Jesus is saying to us, lean into me. Trust that I'm the healer. Trust that I'm good. Go to the pool. That's where the seeing is. But you got to believe in me in this moment. If you're waiting to have it all figured out, you're not going to. Come, take the step of faith, lean into Him. Let's figure it out together. That's what this journey of faith is all about. Come with your doubts, come with your uncertainty. There has been things that have been done to some of you that have caused suffering in your life that there's no answers for, but it has created uncertainty in you. Like, if God would allow that to happen, I'm not sure I want to follow that kind of God. If God allows this to take place, then I'm not sure I believe in that type of God. And there are some of you that have the doubts and the questions and the uncertainty. And Jesus says, it's okay, come. Lean into me. Believe. We'll take this faith step. Go to the pool. You don't have to have all the answers. I'm God. You're not. You're not going to figure it all out. So picture the scene here, back to verse 8 in the text. I love the rest of the story. We're just going to get through 12 today. We'll jump back in next week. Verse 8, the neighbors and those who had seen him before as a beggar were saying, is this not the man who used to sit and beg? Some said, it is he. Others said, no, but he's not like him. And he kept saying, I am the man. Again, like, I'm not deaf, people. I was blind. Now I'm not even blind. So, like, picture the scene. Some believe, some don't. Some are like, it's not him, but he's like a lookalike. Like, I feel like it's like a Tell the Truth episode. Like, would the real blind beggar please stand up? He's like, no, I'm him. Like, I'm the guy. I am the man. I'm the real blind beggar. I am the man. Like, he's not like a I am the man kind of way. He's like, I'm the guy. Like, I'm the guy you're talking about. Not deaf, people. Verse 10. So they said to him, "Then how were your eyes opened?" Man, there's always the how group. I need an explanation here. How were your eyes opened? Like, I don't see any doctors. I don't see a book telling me how. There's always the how group around. Verse 11, he answered, "The man called Jesus made mud, anointed my eyes, and said to me, 'Go to Siloam and wash.' So I went and washed and received my sight." I don't know all the hows. I don't know all the whats. All I have is my story. All I have is what Jesus did for me. Verse 12, they said to him, "Where is he?" He said, "I don't know." This was text message, IDK, like, "I don't know. I don't know. Where is he?" Now, let's just pause for a moment and say, like, isn't this a mean thing to ask a blind guy? Like, where is he? I was blind. I don't know. I don't know where he is. Like, don't forget, when he went from wherever Jesus was to the pool, still blind, he doesn't even know what Jesus looks like. Like, where is Jesus? I don't know where Jesus is. I was blind like 8 seconds ago. What do you mean, where is he? Like, that's a cruel thing to ask a blind guy in the text. Where is he? I don't know where he is. All I have is my story. Listen to me. You have a story. You have a story. This guy's story is, I was a blind beggar. Jesus had compassion on me. I believed and he healed me. I was blind and now I see. That is the story of every Jesus follower in this room. I was blind and now I see. My story has different details, different chapters, different characters than this story has. But in the end, that is my story. The storyline is the same. I was a spiritually blind person and Jesus made my eyes to see. I was lost, but now I'm found. He rescued me. That's our story. That's our storyline. That's the story of redemption. Whatever it is in your life that had you blinded by sin, had you lost in sin, Jesus made you to see. Jesus sought you out and found you. Jesus redeemed you. That is the story of redemption for this guy in John 9 and for each one of us sitting in City Church in 2018. Learn to tell your story. I don't have all the answers. I can't explain all the hows and wheres and whys that people want to ask, but I can tell you what happened to me. I can tell you about my rescue. If you're a follower, tell your story. Point people to Jesus. In a day and age of skepticism and questions and doubts and cynicism, tell your story. Point them to Jesus. It doesn't mean that we don't seek answers and have qualified, great answers to talk about. I mean, if you guys know me, you know I'm a student. I love to learn. I love to debate. I love to figure it out. I love to have answers for every question. I'm that guy. Like, I'm the why guy in the story. But in the end of the day, all I have is my story. All I can say is I don't have it all figured out. I don't have all the answers, but I can tell you, Jesus picked me up when I was broken. Jesus came to me. He sought me out. He redeemed me. He made me whole. I can tell you I was blind and now I see. Point people to Jesus. So I want to end with these two reminders. One, people have value. God created all people with intrinsic value. Treat people with value. This guy had value. Jesus had compassion on him. So I grew up in a Christian home, and one of the big hot ticket items back in the age when I was growing up in Christianity was precious moments. Anybody have any precious moments? And so one of the little precious moments, if you don't know what I'm talking about, just zone out for a minute. One of the little precious moments figurines that was passed around was this little kid, and the little caption on the kid was, "I know I'm special, because God doesn't make any junk." Remember that? It's like all over refrigerators, everywhere, precious moments figurine. Some of you got in your house right now. It's okay. You can live with it. Welcome to the 80s, but you can keep that figurine in your house. "I know I'm special, because God doesn't make any junk." Every person has intrinsic value because you have been created by God. You were created in the image of God. And so was every other person. Every person has value. Every person has worth. As a follower of Jesus, I value life. I value it from the womb all the way to the grave. I value life because every life has been created in the image of God. Every individual has been created by God. Value them. Treat them with respect, especially the poor and ostracized, especially the blind beggars of our day. There's three ways that we can react to individuals who are kind of in this blind beggar category as individuals and as a church. We can reject them, like this blind guy. That's our tendency, to avoid people that make us uncomfortable, to stay away from them. That's what we do, right? We put situations, whether they approach us or we approach them, and they may look a little different, smell a little different, behave a little different, and our tendency is to reject them. That's not what Jesus did. There's a second way you can react. You can talk about them. You can talk about them, and we tend to talk judgmentally. They deserve what they got. That guy's an addict. He deserves that. I don't know what that guy's going to do with my money. He deserves whatever's coming to him. We can talk about them, can't we? Man, we love to talk about them. People make us uncomfortable, different stage of life, look different than us. We can talk about them, judge them, just like the people in this text did. But I want to learn to respond how Jesus responded. He loved them. He loved them. He did not embarrass them. He did not reject them. He did not ridicule them. He did not dismiss them. He did not ignore them. He loved the addict. He loved the homeless. He loved the blind beggar. He loved them, and he brought light into the darkness. In this text, there's a little truth that I don't have time to focus on, that God is glorified when we minister to the outcast. Jesus says to the outcast, God will be glorified as he does his work. You know what the work is? The work is ministry. The work is us meeting people where they're at and shining the light of Jesus in their lives. And Jesus is saying in this story, God is glorified when that happens. When we do ministry, especially to the ostracized and outcast, God is glorified through that. We should love them and point them to Jesus. Man, I don't have time to read the text, but go read the end of Matthew 25. Jesus says the authenticity of our faith is revealed how we treat the outcast. You know the people he lists in that text? Hungry and homeless and strangers and thirsty and sick and imprisoned. He says value the people that other people think are worthless. You value them. You go to them. You minister to them. You be there for them. Man, that got me thinking as a pastor. Like, where are we? Like, are we in the prisons? Like, are we ministering to the outcast? Are we interacting with the people that everybody else wants to ignore and reject? Like, Jesus says, that's the sign of your faith. When you're receiving them, you're receiving me, Jesus says. Like, there are value in people. In our day and age, in our culture, in our media, and everything that's happening to try to tear us apart, don't forget that every person you are talking to, every person that disagrees with you, every person across the aisle from you, they are created by God. They have intrinsic value about them. Treat them that way. I better stop. I'm going to start preaching in a moment. All right, here's the last one we're going to end with. I want to remind us that suffering has purpose. It has purpose. I know it's hard to see that God is working all things for his glory, even when we can't see it, even when we can't understand it. Even when the doctor says it's cancer or the cancer's back. Even when dementia robs your loved ones of their memory. We saw my 90-year-old mama yesterday who's plagued with dementia. And probably no less than 20 times in the 20 minutes we were there, she'd say, where's Papa? Where's my husband? When's he coming back? I'm always been gone for 10 years. He's with Jesus. He's in heaven. You're going to see him again one day. 2 minutes later, has anybody seen Papaw? Where's Papaw? When's he coming? Where is he? I'm always in heaven with Jesus. You're going to see him again one day. A minute later. Where's Papaw? Has anybody seen Papaw? I don't always get it and understand it. But when dementia robs our loved ones of those precious memories and moments, don't forget, God is glorified. He's working all things for his glory. When that accident leaves them disabled, when that child is taken, when that job is lost, when that home is destroyed, personal tragedy is a painful reality, isn't it? It's why the question why is such a natural reaction. But this story reminds us, he's good. He's compassionate. He cares. He can be trusted. And he's working during your suffering and through your suffering for your good and for his glory. So all of us have seen in our lives some type of mural. There's a lot of really big murals that people paint in big cities on the side of buildings. We've seen them in artwork. We've seen them in frames. And the thing about a mural is if you get really close to a mural, it makes no sense. All you can see is the immediate colors in your face. To understand a mural, you have to step back and you have to look at the entire canvas. I have no clue how people paint those, how the artist sees it, how he expresses him or herself in that moment. All I can see is the finished product, looking back as an observer and seeing the whole canvas. When we were in Denver recently out to visit Kaylee, they had a street fair, and in the streets of Denver, all these artists were painting with chalk. They were painting these giant murals, and you're looking at them thinking, that makes no sense to me, how they know to paint purple here and pink here and green here. But in their minds, they had the finished product, the final picture of what would become a beautiful work of art. In that moment, standing on the street corner, I could only see what was in front of me. I couldn't get the whole thing. As we live life, God is painting a mural that we can't always see because we live in the here and now. The only thing we can see is what is in front of us, the colors in front of our eyes. Sometimes those colors are bright, sometimes they are very dark, whatever season of life we're going in. As human beings, we don't have the opportunity to be pulled back into eternity to see the entire picture at work. All we can do is we can live in the moment and say, I trust the artist. I trust that he is painting something beautiful beyond what my eyes can see and understand. It may hurt right now. I may not understand it right now. I don't have it all figured out, but I can't see the whole picture. So I have to trust the artist. Trust that he is good. Trust that he is compassionate. Trust that he is working all things for my good and his glory. Aren't you thankful we serve a suffering Savior who identifies with us in our blindness and is painting a picture that is beyond what we can see? Will you trust him today? Will you rest in him? I don't know what you're going through, but hear me closely. Jesus loves you. He is near. Lean into him. You don't have it all figured out, neither do I. Lean into him. I've got questions, Devin, so do I. Like, lean into him. Rest in him. He is good.